What is up, everybody? This is Braden from Flint Mastering, and I am the host and content curator of the Mixing Music Podcast exclusive episodes. And today we have for you an exclusive archive, which means you're going to hear an exclusive episode that DK and I recorded almost a year ago. You're going to have the chance to hear what our exclusive episodes are all about and how much fun and learning goes on between me and DK as we discuss technical tips and important techniques in relation to producing, mixing, and mastering. If you enjoy this episode and you'd like to be a part of the exclusive content we provide twice a week, you can do so by heading over to mixingmusicpodcast.com/exclusive. Thank you so much for listening. We love you, we appreciate you, and we couldn't do this podcast without you. I hope you enjoy this episode of the exclusive archives. And with that, happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. Friends, and welcome back to yet another exclusive subscriber-only episode of the Mixing Music Podcast. I'm your host for today, and until the end of the year, Braden from Flint Mastering, and joining me is the Japanese samurai and his stewardess. Gosh, dang it, I couldn't think of the word for like,
squire?
Oh, his mentee. DK is the mentor. James is the mentee.
Squire.
So he is a squire, a mini samurai. Please welcome DK and James Dean. What's up, guys?
Ooh.
What up, what up? Actually, Mini Samurai was a game on the Nintendo Wii that wasn't very popular, but it was like one of my favorite games of all time. So if you've ever played Mini Samurai on the Nintendo Wii and you know what I'm talking about, it's fucking one of the best games ever. It was actually really good. Also, I'm from Okinawa, and technically there were no samurai.
Ah, so you're just a
so
bitch.
Like well, we did lose both sides of the war. We lost to Japan, and then Japan lost. So it's like, yeah, we
awkward.
No, but if anything, what is it? I'm a fisherman, or a farmer, or a trader, or more likely, I'm a karate master because karate was invented in Okinawa. It's an Okinawan martial art.
Cool. Yeah. Interesting.
So it's technically not Japanese. It's specifically Okinawan. Pre-Japan Okinawa.
Wow. Hmm.
Ah.
Is senpai like the what I would be then in that analogy?
No, you're the Kohai. I'm senpai.
Kohai. Okay. Kohai.
Yeah, and because Braden and I are the same age, we'd be Doki. We are Doki. And we are your senpai. And you are our Kohai.
Kohai.
Yeah,
that's who I suck am. It, James. I'm your senpai.
I take honor in being Kohai, so I reject, I reject the shame that you give me for trying to learn.
Well, folks, if you're wondering why we're talking about Japanese culture, it has nothing to do with the clip today. DK was just talking a lot about it before we started.
Okay, quick synopsis of The Last Samurai, which is why it's really great. And I talk about this as another differentiation between American culture and Japanese culture. Western Christian culture, through repentance, you know, redemption through Jesus Christ kind of idea. Tom Cruise, he preserves his honor in the American way by never giving up. And the Japanese samurai are like, why is this fool not giving up? He's obviously lost. And he keeps like, so he's like, oh, that's honor bound. Like I'm honor bound. I can't give up ever. But a Japanese person, like, you know how they kill themselves? They commit seppuku. It's because it's more dishonorable to not show humility in defeat. Like when you lose, you have to give up. That's honorable to show that you show humility, that you acknowledge that you lost. It's dishonorable to not acknowledge that you are losing. Does that make sense? So in the movie, he's like, why is Tom Cruise not giving up? And at the end, the leader of the samurai kind of takes on the American tradition where he's like planning just for the sake of politics and for like the theme of it. Like he's like, I will not back down from this unwinnable fight. Like, cause it's stupid for a samurai army to like go against another army that they know they would lose to. Like that's just super dishonorable. And so like at the very end, he agrees to fight this fight that they know that they're going to lose. And he gets shot down. He's like, I can't give up. And at the end, Tom Cruise is the one that talks to the emperor and gives up on behalf of the samurai. So it's like a total flip in culture. Great synopsis, great movie about the differences, basic differences between East versus West.
Huh. Interesting.
I've never seen that.
I've never seen it.
It's, you haven't seen it? It's fucking great. It's so great. It's so good. Great movie.
Well, maybe I will not ever watch it. Just kidding. No, but seriously, I'm probably not going to watch it. All right, let's get
No, you should. I'm serious. You should. It's a really good movie. It's not as good if you didn't know that. Like, if you didn't know East versus West culture, like, it's not as good. But now that you know that, it's a fucking fantastic movie. I think it's like one of the best, actually.
Interesting. All righty. Well, we're going to talk about a mixer today who is also one of the best. That I'd never heard of before until today, so I guess he's not that good.
Wait.
No, just kidding. Yeah, we're going to have a clip from Neil Pogue, who, from what I've been told, is a big mixer for Tyler, the Creator, has done Kendrick Lamar stuff, so obviously he is in the who's who, the Hall of Fame of mixing, and he is going to talk about making things dimensional in the mix. So here we go. Without further ado, Neil Pogue, roll the tape.
I like to mix where things are kind of dimensional. It's not just right there in your face, like one big wall. I want to create these levels. Sometimes something has to take a backseat. Sometimes people ask me, how'd you get that bass to work with the kick? It's about finding that right frequency so they kind of stay out of each other's way. Sometimes you gotta make that kick dirty so that the frequency in the bass can shine through. And this kick here has a little bit of distortion.
Alrighty, DK and James. So short and sweet from Neil tells us he likes to make things dimensional in the mix. He doesn't want a wall of sound coming at us. He likes to create levels between things. And he likes to do that between, he kind of specifically talked about finding the right frequencies to get things to sit together, like the kick and the bass. And, you know, he says it makes the kick grimy so that the bass stands out more and things like that. So we'll go to James first. Tell us why you chose this clip. What was kind of in your mind, the thought process behind this? And then DK will get your thoughts on it as well.
Yeah, for sure. So I was looking through a few of his clips. I personally really like his mixes in a way that he described it in there. Like, oh, we have a kick, we have a bass. Let's dirty one of them to make them stand out and separate. And also, I do like the dimensions of his mixes. I the only way I know how to describe how his mixes sound to me is they're not like these insanely clean in terms of, like, you know, Manny Mariquin is like very crispy and clean, but it's very much like It's all like an ecosystem and a vibe, and some things are dirty and it all like works together. And I really liked what he said about you got to give things their own time to shine. You have to give dimension. I feel like the past few months I started doing something like that with things like automation and, you know, knowing when, okay, this part is a little too cluttered. I could do some weird EQ stuff, but that could cut out the life of some instruments, or I could just use automation and turn something down and bring it back, and then bring this forward and bring this other thing back. And so I like what he said at the end about you got to really consider the space and giving things their own time and knowing when to pull and push things forward. So I do think that's something really cool to live by. Like, it's been such a thing of like, okay, why is this part like feel so cluttered? And it's not a frequency thing. It's not like anything else. It's literally just as simple as like, oh, I'll turn down this part for right here. And all of a sudden, like, things open up.
Yeah, I do like that he said a few things about dimension. First off, what is dimension? He didn't quite explain that, but we'll just pretend like that question doesn't exist. He talked about creating dimension by using frequencies and properly using frequencies. And he specifically in that short clip talked about the creating the frequency different disparity between the bass and the kick. And like in this case, like talking about, you know, piggybacking on what you said, and he said dirtying the kick, that's very practical because what happens when you dirty the kick, you're adding more harmonic content. For example, you're adding more octave harmonics. So if you have, let's say, a sub that's 60 hertz, resonating at 60 hertz, the fundamental frequency 60 hertz, and for some reason the kick that's recorded is also 60 hertz, one of the things that you can do is you can EQ the kick to rely less on the 60 hertz and rely more on 120 hertz or anywhere like 100 hertz, anything else. So you can spread out and create more, contrast between each other by taking up different frequencies, distorting or dirtying a specific sonic source will generate harmonics to basically move away from the fundamental frequency to create more sound and noise away from where the original root note, root frequency is. So you're basically letting it splash a little bit more frequency-wise, which can allow it to create more contrast and separation. So on that note, I think in this case, and what he means is to create dimension, you must build sonic contrast through EQ. But it's not just EQ, because adding harmonics through distortion or dirtying it up is a form of, now, I won't say EQ because EQ is a specific tool using phase, but it's a form of utilizing frequencies in a broad spectrum to better build contrast, allowing each subgroup or each instrument to have its own space and drive its own set of frequencies in order to create what feels like a wider, deeper, fuller, taller mix. Proper use of space.
I like that. Do you have a go-to distortion that you use for like the kick?
I have a few that I like to usually start with, but for the purpose of this episode, I will say no. The reason why I have those two or three go-to that I typically go to, and you've seen me do this actually, James, is where I use something like Distinct from Mix or from Kive, and like literally one out of two times, like 50% of the time, I don't even like it. But I instinctively like trying to use it first because I probably like the way it looks, or it's like the easiest to use. And if I can dial that in, I'd probably dial it in faster than anything else. I'm most comfortable with that tool or whatever. I'm not sure exactly why, but I go into it knowing that I may not like the sound. So I have a sound that I want to achieve before I use any distortion or any sort of plugin. So it's not about the plugin that I use. It's about achieving the sound that I hear in my head. And I have a set few that can typically get me there, but I'm open-minded enough and know exactly what I want enough to understand that most of the time it doesn't work on the first try.
Yeah. I like that, yeah. And like something else too is like I usually don't do it 100% wet if I do like distort the kick. Like I'll kind of find like, okay, it's kind of making this part sound good, and then I'll kind of blend back the mix knob until it has like what sounds like to my ears a good balance of the two.
Yeah, most of the time I do 100% wet. Unless I think it's too much. Because like there's a difference between driving, like for example, like compression, like the rubber band compressor. Like, there's a difference between compressing it like 15 dBs. It doesn't say how many dBs of gain reduction is, but there's a difference between hitting the compressor 15 dBs of gain reduction and then backing off the mix knob versus hitting 7 dBs of gain reduction. So there are times that I don't want less compression. I just want to blend in dry signal. Does it make sense? Mm-hmm. Like I want that super heavy compression sound, but I want to blend in the dry signal. So there are times where I will use like that mix knob before. And I typically I like to leave it at 100% wet.
Cool.
Yeah. And that's just like a personal choice. And anyway, but yeah, to answer your question, no, there's not a specific set of tools. Decapitator is great. Kive Audio's, what did I say?
Distinct
is great. The black box, anything distortion, even guitar pedals. I've used guitar pedals before on 808s and kicks.
Oh, cool.
Like, yeah. So it's like whatever works, it's whatever. And if it is a guitar pedal, that will change the frequency a little bit too much. So that's more likely I'll like use the mix knob. Mm-hmm. But it is fun to experiment and try a bunch of different tools and software and to hear how it reacts to different sources.
Yeah. Braden, was there anything that stood out in this that kind of applies to mastering that you thought?
Not in particular. I kind of, for me at least, I feel like all the dimension is kind of taken care of before it gets to me. Really, the only dimension I feel like I can add as a mastering engineer is in one of three ways. number one, using reverb on the whole master, which I've talked about before, I don't like to do, and I think is like pretty rare. I know people do it, but I don't think it's common. And then options two or three is using either a mid EQ or a side EQ, just to kind of, you know, if I want something to poke out in the middle a little more, make it feel like it is coming out further towards you, we can do that. Or, like I said, using sides. It's like so weird to split it into like mid EQ, side EQ, but using mid side EQ on the sides to make it feel like there's an extra dimension out beyond like your ears, like a little bit further out beyond the stereo field. But usually, like, I don't know, in my opinion, like the dimension is kind of already taken care of before it gets to me. And then I want to make it loud so everyone can hear that dimension. But I also have to make sure that I don't kill it.
Yeah, you have to maintain dimension. Yep. So you like make it louder and reduce dynamic range while somehow maintaining the sensation of dimension. So it's you're talking more about like, we're talking more as creating dimension. You're talking more about like just maintaining dimension.
Yep.
Yeah, because you don't want to do like imagers as a mastering engineer.
No.
Typically not. That's like a mix thing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess you can, you know, Ozone has their imager. You can do like a little bit of imaging, but I, again, like I don't recommend it.
I dare you fucking do it on my mixes. I fucking dare you.
I don't do anything to your personal mixes, DK. I just put a limiter on it and send it back. And I'm like, yeah, it sounded like shit, but there's nothing I could do, so...
It's a lost cause.
Just kidding.
Shit, dude. No.
The couple times that I did a master for you, I did very, very little. And you said, yeah, I like this.
Yeah.
So.
I will. I do. Which goes into something, a common topic of honoring the work done previously, which is in the next episode that we're going to bring up with Manny Mariquin. So let's close this one up.
There you go. And, what a segue. Yeah. I thought I was the king of segues, but turns out DK is better at it than I am. So thank you all for listening. Well, gosh, the longer these episodes go on, man, I just get fucking awkward. I don't know what's happening. All right.
I'm so uncomfortable.
Hey,
right
hey,
now.
Hey, maybe, just maybe, you are an awkward person. I don't.
No, I am not. All right. Join the Mixing Music Discord if you haven't already. Links.dkmixes.com for all of DK's cool, free, and helpful stuff. And dkmixes.com/videos for all of DK's Twitch and YouTube goodies. DK, you don't really stream much on Twitch anymore, correct?
Yeah, I haven't been doing it as much.
Okay. Well,
I've just been so busy. I might do it now that winter's here and it's like slowing down a bit. But like I've been to this year was like my best year as far as like nice. Work. Not just like I was able to do everything efficiently, but like I was able to monetize it well. It was just a really good year. I feel like I fucking did my best.
Nice. Hell yeah. Well, make sure that you all as listeners do your best and go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/sponsors to check out our list of sponsors and see all of the cool discounts and things you can get. And of course, excuse me, had to burp. There is a little bit of kickback for us. It helps the show, helps us make better content for you. So with that, thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. We love you. We appreciate you. We cannot do this without you. And DK, sign us off.
Happy mixing, my friends, and stay saucy. Wowie zowie. Are you tired of using Google Drive or Dropbox to send files to clients? Well, never get burned again with FilePass. I love and use FilePass exclusively for sending files to my clients. It's a cloud file sharing website specifically made by engineers for engineers. It's absolutely amazing. Go to mixingmusicpodcast.com/FilePass to check out the full feature list and subscribe today. Never lose another dime to burned projects. Happy mixing, my friends, and enjoy the show.